I think that was a brilliant talk that Linda gave. And, you know, Sinn Féin are experts at rewriting history. And they're currently doing it, rewriting the past 30 years as the story of how Sinn Féin won the war and have come to political prominence and will ultimately rule the United Ireland. And one of the things that they have done is they've taken the Irish language and they're using it as a political football. And it is their language, it's their project, it's their issue, and it really they are the champions of the Irish language. And one of the things that we're accused of is having really almost no culture. And I think what Linda's talk has shown is that there's a richness and a depth and a breadth to the culture that is our culture. And it's not exclusively ours, but it's as much ours as it is the Irish Catholics. And we need to be careful that we don't give away elements of our culture, like St. Patrick. You know, for a while, St. Patrick was, well, he's a Catholic. But we discovered 20, 30 years ago that actually he's not a Catholic at all. You know, he's much our saint as he is, you know, the Republican IRA. So it's important that we appreciate and value and embrace a really rich culture that's ours. But let me move on quickly now, because we know at the moment there is a crucial piece of legislation going through the Assembly, where and it's something that's really relevant to the principles and priorities of the PUP. It's the Welfare Reform Bill. We're told that this brings the most far-reaching reform to social welfare, the social welfare system in the past 60 years. That's it for most of us in our lifetime, that these are the most radical reforms that are taking place. And it has significant support among voters. It's a central policy of the coalition government, and it is widely supported by voters throughout the UK. So we need to look carefully at this to see what is it exactly and what will be the repercussions of this bill if it comes into effect. The aims of it are to get more people into work, ensuring that employment always pays, and to combat worthlessness. Secondly, the stated aim is to protect the most vulnerable. Thirdly, is to simplify an over-complex benefits system. And fourthly, is to deliver fairness, both to those who are claiming benefit and the taxpayer. And how does it do it? Well, the main elements are a universal credit, where six of the existing means-tested and tax credits are combined into one universal credit, which beneficiaries will receive. Secondly, it takes a tougher approach in reducing fraud and error. Thirdly, it's changing DLA to a personal independence payment, and the criteria for qualifying for that will be much tougher than they've been for DLA. Fourthly, there's a tapering of benefits so that as someone enters into employment, they don't lose all their benefits, but as they get into employment and earn more and their income goes up, their benefits go down. Furthermore, there are sanctions and penalties for those who don't comply with the system. And fifthly, the end result will be that it will reduce the Social Security bill by £18 billion. So there, in a nutshell, is what the welfare reform is about. Well, what do we think about it? Well, on the surface, it actually sounds very good. Some of those objectives are excellent objectives. For example, unemployment is a curse. It's bad for the unemployed, it's bad for their family, it's bad for society, it's bad for the neighbourhood, it's bad for the economy. Employment is good, it's an absolutely good thing to be employed. Employment delivers dignity, personal income, better physical and mental health, enables people to contribute to their society and to contribute to the economy. So employment is something that we want for our people. For some people who are ill, what they need is a job that brings some satisfaction. I have patients. The best thing I could give them is a good job. It would do them more good than any of the medicines that I dish out to them. Furthermore, benefit dependency is a curse. It doesn't do anybody any good to have to live on benefits, on a handout from the state. It deprives them of dignity, of self-respect. It's not in their interest, society's interest, or the taxpayers' interest. And the benefit system is too complex and expensive. And there are people who need a stick as well as a carrot to get them back into work. So, on the surface, it's got all that going for it. But, and here comes the but, there are serious issues in the welfare reform bill as it's proposed. Not least, if you're talking about a system that will get people back into work, the fact that there are very few jobs out there is a major problem. How can you penalise somebody for not being in work when there are no jobs available? So it's taking place at a very difficult time. Furthermore, if you're doing a reform like this, reform really must be delivered without putting the most vulnerable at greater risk. In fact, without risking doing them damage and harm by welfare reform. I mean, that's no progress. That's backward movement. So where are the problems? Let me give you four problems, and then I'll hand over to my colleague Phil Hamilton. First is, the universal credit will be paid monthly to a single named member of a household. Well, that is a recipe for disaster. At the moment, benefits are paid usually fortnightly, sometimes weekly. They can be paid to different people. The housing benefit goes to the landlord, the housing association. Child benefit goes to the mother. Here what we're doing is we're giving once a month a sum of money to one named person in a household. Now, that, as I said, is a recipe for disaster. What will happen is, when you get to the end of the month, first of all, a lot of folks who are most vulnerable have difficulty budgeting. I mean, you know, budgeting at the best of times is not necessarily easy. For some people, it is very difficult. Furthermore, if you're budgeting on a shoestring, it's 10 times more difficult. If you've just enough to get through, and you overrun, you're going to have real problems the next month to try and make up what you've overrun, because you're already living on the limit. So it'll lead to increased debt, increased rent arrears. People at the end of the month are going to be stuck with the choice, do I heat or do I eat? And people have been saying, but it actually, I don't know if you read yesterday, but the number of people who die from cold has increased significantly in the past few years. And it will increase family stress. Okay? You're far better to give the money for the kids to the wife to look after the food. So anyway, changes to housing benefit. Again, if you're being paid the money for the housing benefit, the big temptations come up at Christmas. I mean, who's not going to want to buy some presents for the kids? What have you got? From the housing benefit, what do I do? You can see how, again, it's set to cause problems, to create difficulties. There's the under-occupancy criteria, where you're going to be penalised for unoccupied rooms in your house. Now, again, so your housing benefit drops because you've got a bedroom that nobody's sleeping in on a regular basis. So what does that do? Well, first of all, your housing benefit's reduced, so you're under greater hardship. Secondly, people are going to then be forced to try and relocate. And for somebody who's vulnerable, say they've got mental health problems, say they've got young kids, relocating is very disruptive. It'll lead to increased breakdowns, family breakdowns. If you're a young man separated from your partner and your kids, if you don't have a second bedroom, your kids will never stay with you at weekends or overnight. So it's going to put increased pressure and stress on what is already a difficult situation in many families. Elderly, lots of elderly are living in houses. They've been living there for 30 years. Their family grew up in it. They've got 3 bedrooms. They're going to lose housing benefit because of those 2 empty bedrooms. So they're going to be being forced to move to somewhere new, different. There's the support system that has grown up with their neighbours and their friends. And what's more, there are not going to be sufficient houses for people to relocate into. So you can see it's really is going to cut funds. Thirdly, it's IT based. So if you want to make a claim, you've got to fill in your claim form online. Now again, what a nightmare for many people, particularly elderly people. And what's more, this is going to require a really sophisticated IT infrastructure. The timescale is simply unrealistic. A leaked report from the government showed that the IT industry had concerns about this. And if you look at the history of IT projects in the public sector, there is hardly a single successful story. In fact, they've almost all been real disasters. And this is the mother of all disasters waiting to happen. If it switches and benefits don't come through, we've got a real on our hands. So that's the third problem. And a fourth problem is the work capacity assessment. Now this is where people are being reassessed, okay? And the idea is to try and bring people who are capable of work or could be capable of work or could be helped to work back into work. People who are on incapacity benefit, sickness benefit, employment support allowance. Now, I'm a GP, and I have to tell you, you may not like it, but I agree with the principle in this. I have loads of patients, and in my opinion, doing some work would do them a lot of good. Now, I've also got loads of patients who could never, in 100 years, hold down a job or provide good service to an employer. And in fact, it would be detrimental in a serious way to their health. But some people, it's right for. However, the way they're doing it is they're using this firm called Atos. It's a French firm, private firm. It's based on a computerized assessment. And to date, these assessments, their record is woeful. It is the ultimate blunt instrument. At present, up to 70% people who fail the work capacity assessment, up to 70% on appeal when they're appealed. Now, what sort of a system is it where 70% of the time you're judged to have got it wrong? Now, admittedly, the statisticians among us is not 70% of the time, but of those who appeal, 70% when they're appealed. And what's more, being put off your benefit is extremely stressful. I don't know if you've done it. I'm fortunate that I've never been in that position, but I have had numerous patients come to me who have been refused to be put off their benefit. And I tell you, it plays havoc. It's torture. The audit, the performance of Atos, I mean, it makes G4S look like an efficient organisation. So we have a blunt instrument that is really not fit to do the job that it's been asked to do. It needs replaced by a more rigorous and safe process that takes into account the needs of long-term sick and disabled and those with severe and enduring mental health problems should be exempted from what is a very traumatic experience. So there, in the course of about 5 minutes, you've got four major problems that are going to actually do what the policy is supposed not to do. In other words, place the most vulnerable at increased risk of harm. Very briefly then, what should we do? Well, there are three things that we're going to do. First of all, we're going to insist on a full, robust interrogation of the legislation as it's been presented to Stormont. We're going to work with our political colleagues, in particular with Michael Copeland, to ensure that these concerns are really addressed and put forward in the most robust way possible. Secondly, we're going to support the Welfare Reform Group. Welfare Reform Group is a collective of community involved sector and the trade unions that put forward some very sensible and reasonable modifications to the bill. And there is room and precedent for changes to legislation that take account of Northern Ireland's specific circumstances. So we're going to work with and support the Welfare Reform Group and what they're proposing. And we're going to make people aware of the problems that are coming down line to them. We need to make people aware, because the coalition government has spun this very cleverly and presented it in a very beneficial way. And people are largely, or at least have until recently, been aware of the implications. So we're going to ensure that as many people as possible know about the potential consequences. And fourthly, the Irish Congress of Trade Unions are having a rally next Saturday, the 20th, and I would encourage you to go along. We've been talking to the ICTU and Peter Bunting, folks there, about it, and we want to support what they're doing in opposing it. Let me just say that, finally, that youth unemployment is a real blight on our communities. And while we flag this up, we also need to say we need to look again at youth unemployment. It is a curse. It's a complex issue, and as a party, we need to come up with some ideas as to how we actually address this issue. But in terms of welfare reform, this is too important to be done in a cack-handed way with an ulterior motive to save money. Thank you very much, Conference.